We're back, and as promised, part two here, our good friend, and look, nobody I believe does more research and does it better using his industry knowledge, his contacts, and his passion for Mets baseball. But you heard from him back in March. We did the Talking Mets, as only David has created this prospect list, the Talking Mets prospect list for pitchers. Now, as the season has started, the positional player list has been launched out on the premium site on the Substack. If you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and we put it free for everybody. Eventually, you're going to have to pay for this kind of stuff because it's great stuff. But we put it out there free for everybody to kind of let everybody see what kind of work David does and what we're trying to do here over at the Talking Mets Podcast. But he's joining me now, David Mills, and appropriate on a weekend where the Mets positional players disappointed against the A's, and we saw a former positional player or a couple of former positional players from the Mets system do well on the other side. We're talking about the Mets system here and maybe injecting some hope to a fan base that has had a rough weekend. So, David, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining me here in the second hour as we chat a little bit about the Mets farm system from the offensive side of the ball.
Greetings, Mike, and all our Talking Mets fans out there. It was a very difficult watch this week, the last five games. It was. I only can laugh because it's like pulling teeth to try to get some runs scored here. Even when they have men on base, they can't seem to get them in. And I think there's some people struggling there. We've talked about it. In my piece, I talked about it. I've talked about it before the season. I thought Carson Benj was rushed up to the major leagues. I'm sure they know something that you and I don't, and everybody who's listening. But, he's struggling at the plate, and he's having a little kind of a whoops here and there in the outfield. But he is playing. One of the things I think they've done with him is they have him playing all three positions in the outfield, which he's clearly capable of. But that doesn't help your offense either. When you were a young guy and you didn't expect to be in the major leagues this year, and suddenly you're playing all three outfield positions, that's a lot to take in. He seems like he's got good speed. He has base stealing instincts. He's got good outfield instincts, but he's having a lot of trouble with making contact and quality contact.
Well, here's the more concerning part, and we'll start with Benj because this is the poster child of where the Mets are. And if they're going to be successful, and I said this in the first hour, the homegrown positional players in this organization, the ones that are currently on the roster, and over the next couple of years, those that may be to come, have to contribute. Everybody talks about the money. Everybody talks about free agency. Forget the CBA and what could be after this year. I don't care who you are. Even the Dodgers, as they made their way to be in the machine they are now, they had guys like Will Smith that they brought up. They had position Andy Páez. They've had guys that they've been able to put into the lineup and contribute at a high level. The Mets have not. Now, Benj is, and this is one of the things that has come up from many different listeners, and it came up in the first hour, and without reading every single comment, I'll start there. The concern they have with Benj is not only what you said, how he visibly looks out there, especially on the offensive side, putting aside the defensive miscues, made a good play in the outfield on Sunday, saved a couple of runs. But when you go to the advanced metrics at a baseball savant, you see a guy that doesn't hit the ball hard, doesn't barrel up, chases a little bit. Maybe that's normal for a young player, has a good walk rate. But here's the really concerning part. Hitting the ball on the ground and his bat speed is slow. Those are not things that you would expect if a player, even if you're overwhelmed at the big league level, those are physical attributes. Those are process stats. Any thoughts on that? Because a slow bat hitting the ball on the ground, that profiles as a 4A backup outfielder type. Wouldn't be the first prospect to bust, but this is not the player that was advertised and that the Mets were so bullish on throughout the offseason.
No, and if you remember, Beatty had some of the same issues. He was hitting the ball too much on the ground. The bat speed wasn't good enough, and that happened over 2 years or more. And he managed to get it worked out. He managed to get more line drive and more loft and more bat speed. It's funny because there's a kid who was attended our baseball academy. He was playing at a D1 school, and he's doing fantastically well. And the one thing we want to do in the off season is get his bat speed up. He's leading his D1 team in every just about every offensive category. But you got to get that bat speed up, and you can't let it falter. So part of it is, if you look at Benj, he's kind of a lean guy. He doesn't seem to have a lot of muscle. Maybe he's still looking to get those final man muscles going. But he needed more time to develop. He only had, I think there were 24 games last year in AAA, and he did not do well. So he needs to face those kind of 4A pitchers, pitchers who have had an opportunity to pitch in the major leagues a number of times, pitchers who know how to get guys out, some guys who have lots of velocity, some guys who have just lots of stuff and not enough velocity. So he needs to be there. And he needs to do that, and he needs to get in the gym more, and all of those kind of things that are hard to learn and do and implement when you're part of a major league organization trying to win.
Dave, the thing I think that bothers Mets fans, and maybe part of this is you've had an owner that's had to go through a couple of GMs. It took him a while to get to Stearns. There was a lot of holdovers when he took over in the scouting department, and they look at Detroit and Kevin McGonigal, who the Mets passed on for Colin Houk. They look at Pittsburgh bringing up their top prospect. These are really young, top 20, top 100 positional players, and they're having immediate success. Sure, they'll have their pitfalls, but the Mets, whether it's Beatty, Alvarez, now Benj, we'll see with Ewing, or who knows what Ilian Pena over the next couple of years, are not seeing that. They really haven't had anybody come up and have an impact of that caliber. You could say Alonso, but then even before that, you're talking about David Wright. Position-wise, it's been acquisitions. Might I say Michael Conforto? Maybe I'm being a little bit too unkind to Conforto. That's, I think, what's bothered. Is it a process thing with the Mets? Is there something going on with the way they're teaching hitting? Because this is not the you mentioned Beatty. This is the second time we're seeing Brett Beatty part two here with Benj.
I think that happens on every team. There's guys like this. Look at the Cardinals have some guys who are just breaking through. Walker's just started to break through. It's a tough thing to come to the major leagues, and suddenly, every time you get rid of a starting pitcher, now you've got a guy coming in who's throwing 97, 98, or has a nasty, some nasty off-speed pitches or breaking pitches, and it's just. You need the developmental time. Sure, every once in a while there's a guy who doesn't need as much time. I don't know why they thought Benj in it, and I'm not putting Benj down. I think that he needs more time to develop, and it's serious. I mean, all you have to do is watch. You don't have to be a baseball savant to realize that he's struggling, and that he's also carrying that offense into the the field of play. And it's affecting his defense, just like I think, Lindor's offense is affecting his defense and his whole frame of mind. But the Mets have, it's funny, man. It's so much pressure is put on that first draft choice, and what you're seeing. I mean, look at the guys, Carlos Cortez. Keith Hernandez was raving about him today.
Yep,
Now
I was
you and.
thinking of you. If I remember when we've had you on in the past, or I know our conversations offline. I mean, this is a kid. He's 29 years old. He was basically bouncing around the Mets system forever. You liked him. You liked him,
Oh,
and he's not going to play every day there because of Brett Rooker. But even last year, in very limited time, 100 at bats, he had an 866 OPS with some pop.
yeah.
Now he doesn't walk a lot, but these players don't grow on trees.
Well, he was DHing two of these games. So if you're a DH in the major leagues, somebody figures you're a pretty good hitter, And so, but the Mets let him get away for nothing. They just let him go after 6 years. They just let him walk, and I think he signed with as a free agent, a minor league free agent with the A's. Jake Mangum is another one. They just let him walk.
But Dave, look at what he did in Syracuse, Cern's first year. I mean, 786 OPS, 16 homers, 52 RBIs. Not a bad International League season, but nothing that says, oh, we should hold on to this guy. I mean, is it something the Mets are doing? I mean, we don't know. I mean, we hear they have this. I mean, Jeff Albert's been in the organization a while. They have a hitting philosophy. It's launch and line drive. You got to wonder because they talk about the hitting coach, but Albert's been with this organization for a while now.
Their pitching was pretty good last year, and they still got rid of their pitching coach. Now, what I don't know, man. There's no way I can. Unfortunately, I don't know anybody at the Mets front office to understand, why they are struggling with position players. But there's position players around the major leagues who are, former Mets, and Jeff McNeil is one of them. So there was Jeff today and Carlos Cortez, and they pretty much in the last two games or all three games were a big reason why the Mets lost. Now, yes, I think that Semien is a little bit better defender than Jeff, although Jeff is more versatile because you could put him in the outfield. I think that Carlos Cortez is a left-handed hitter. He's got some pop. He's a good bat-to-ball hitter. He goes the opposite way. These are guys who you got to wonder why are the Mets paying a part of I think they're playing some of McNeil's salary,
Yeah,
aren't they?
for him to be that's, I mean, out of all the transactions this winter, I think McNeil was the one that came later and even said on Friday during his conversation with the media that even thought about putting him in the outfield. He'd be a great hedge for Benj. And that's what I think. I mean, you look at Benj, and if you guys go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com and go to the premium content, even sign up, and you get to see Dave's piece here. He has doesn't even have Benj as the number one prospect. I think the real story here, and it'll be a story that goes throughout the summer, and I put it in my non-predictions predictions that at some point this season, I know you might not agree because you have him as 2027. They're gonna he's in Binghamton now. We'll see if we eventually get a promotion probably in June to Syracuse. I think AJ Ewing, your number one positional prospect, is gonna make an impact at the big league level in some way. And you've jumped ahead on that, and you weren't talking about this because Benji got off to a bad start. I could tell you guys, Dave's been talking about this all winter. Trust me on this. And he talked about Ewing last year, if I remember, when we talked about the prospects.
Yeah, Ewing is a difference maker, and what's the difference maker with him is one, bat to ball skills and his elite speed. Benj has very good speed, very good plus speed, but Ewing is, and Morabito as well, they
Yeah.
have elite speed and the ability to steal bases almost at will, and that also translates to outfield play because that kind of elite speed just does things for a team. In fact, I don't think if Soto's injury was something that's going to take, more time than we expect, I would, and especially if Polanco has to be rested because of his Achilles issues, having Ewing and Morabito defending in center field and moving Robert to right field, that's what I would do. If you want to give somebody some major league time just to, it's like, okay, we're bringing you up for 10 games or 2 weeks or a road trip or whatever. Let those two guys do something and see what they can spark because there's so much speed there that speed kills. And that's what we're looking for.
What's interesting is that you bring that up for Ewing, but you've been so adamant about Benj getting time at AAA. It's almost like, and I doubt the Mets would do a 10-dayer with a top prospect with service time and everything. When Morabito, that's different. You seem more comfortable with Ewing getting some, even now, small sample size of big league time than Ewing,
Well, I
or
think
than
he would
Benj.
do. Yeah, I think he would do more and better than Benj. But I'm not rushing him either. I think he needs this half year to be at Double A and then to move to Triple A. And if they brought him up in September, I think that would be fine. If he was the one offensive player they brought up in September. But the bottom line is they could easily bring up Morabito, and Morabito's off to a good start. I mean, again, it's limited. It's 14 games, but he's batting .295. He's got a .367 on base. His slugging is, pretty good for a guy who doesn't hit home runs. He's got 844 OPS, and he's got a couple of home runs and RBI. He's got five RBI. So he's a guy who you can bring up and say, hey, let's see what he can do. Can they put him in right field? They probably can, but I think Robert could slide over to right field. He's got the arm for it, and I think he's been. That's another thing. I think I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, before the season started, even before spring training, that these Mets guys who love to talk about the Mets, like on Baseball Night in New York, especially Sal. He was so convinced by, I don't know what he was reading. He needs to look at the analytics and the metrics. Robert was never an elite center fielder. He was never even a plus center fielder. He was just an average center fielder. And actually, his metrics showed him to be slightly below average, but I'll go with average. And suddenly, guys were expecting him to come in there and be like the second coming of Willie Mays.
Right.
And it's not happening. It's not going to happen. So I don't think he's the answer in center field from what I've seen so far. But I'm very pleased with his hitting. I mean, the fact
Yeah,
that
they
he's.
definitely use it. They missed his bat, I think, today, and I would put him in, you know, with these, he's not a homegrown player, but he's a younger player that has been through the gauntlet, very much like Beatty and Alvarez and Benj on the early part. That has a chance here to make an impact around the core offensive stars. And if he doesn't do it, the story of the Mets offense this year will be none of their component players or not enough of their component players will make a difference. And that's why this is so important, what we're talking about with the positional side, because if you're talking about these guys not being who you think they are, and I think we're at the point with Beatty and Alvarez where it's put up or whatever. Then you're going to look to Ewing. Then you're going to look to Benj. And I'll tell you what, and this is what happens when you're in a big market like New York, when there's prospect huggers and rankings and video every day you go watch. Elian Pena, who's off to a great start in St.
He is.
Lucie, and no, we don't know what his position is going to be. I don't think it's going to be shortstop. There's going to be calls within, and you have him as a 2029 ETA. There'll be calls just like when Juan Soto got called up, or Doc back in the day got called up, or Jose Reyes got called up, David Wright, a little bit older. But there'll be calls to bring this kid up because they'll see him having success and dominating the lower level. Pena, maybe that's the guy that's the first big positional star, not just a good player, star, since David Wright. Maybe he's the guy.
Well, I came very close to making Pena number three, and
Ahead of bench.
no, I think I was going to keep Benj at three, and then at a what did I have? I had a
You have
no, I had a
Ewing. You were going
Reimer.
to move
I had a Reimer.
I had a Reimer. I'm sorry, I had a Reimer. You have Reimer slightly ahead of him at that
But I
point.
mean, I honestly didn't expect Benj to have this much trouble, although I did not expect him to do well with the bat. And I'm not totally displeased. I see some things there that might come through in the future, in the near future even, but he's got to get some more time at AAA. But Elian Pena, I've watched as much video as I could find on him, and one of the things that's very impressive are his hands, both defensively and offensively. He's got very soft hands in the field. He's got quick, fast hands at the plate. He hits with power for a guy who's not that big. And I think he could play shortstop. I definitely think there's a chance he could be at third base. The question is for a player like him, and I did move him down. Last year I had him or ETA at 2030. I moved it to 2020.
Right.
One is Lindor is a long-term contract. You have a lot of shortstop and third baseman types, and Mauricio and Reimer and Beatty, and there's a few other guys too. There's another Jimenez who's in my list of the top 15 here. But I think that time will tell on him. I don't think they're going to rush him. But yeah, he might turn 20 and suddenly be ready to play like some of these other guys, around the major leagues. I do think that. I could honestly put him at number two and not even worry about it. I do think he will be a major league player. Now, after that, I think Suero is a really interesting talent. And I talked about it in here. He's very versatile. He plays these catches. He's got some skills as a catcher. He's got some weaknesses as a catcher. But he also plays some left field. He plays some first base. My guess is he could jump in there at third base and all the corners. And he's actually tearing it up. So he's got 3 home runs and 10 RBIs in just 7 games at Binghamton. So he's quite somebody to keep your eye on. And by the way, he's from the Bronx, which is, not that many really great players come out of New York City.
Yeah, Harrison Bader did.
Well, he came out of Westchester, but
Right. Yeah, a little bit north, right.
Well,
It's funny because
Adam
Swerels hit the three
Ottavino.
home runs. Yeah, Adam Ottavino, yeah, for sure. Low batting average, high on base, some walks. Truly a three true outcome player is Chris Swero at that point. If you look even Reimer, when you factor in those who have departed, the Jett Williams of the world who's struggling at AAA with Milwaukee system, I guess the again, I keep going back to it, and Pena may be the exception, international signing. I just we're not seeing Mets offensive positional players progress like other teams, it feels like. Now, I don't have data to back that up. And Connor Griffin out in Pittsburgh's hitting a $150. So it's not like every big shot comes up and hits right away.
Okay, well, let me dispel that a little bit. So, who's out there that started in the Mets system? Alonso, Dom Smith,
Sure, fair enough.
McNeil, Jimenez, is a terrific player, and boy,
Fair enough.
a
Fair
great
enough.
player. Ahmed Rosario is doing well for the Yankees right now, isn't he?
But
Travis
he's a
d'Arnaud.
backup. He's a component player, and that was a guy that was a top five.
Yeah, platoon player, but
You know,
he can
not the
hit.
profile that ever came up. You know, Dom Smith, whatever. There was always skepticism about him when he was drafted.
Nimmo is
Pete
hitting, isn't he? He's
Nimmo,
a Mets.
sure. I mean, we're going way back to
How about
another.
Pete Crow?
I think he's
Well,
overrated. I actually
but
think I
he.
got to tell you, Pete Crow's a good defensive player. I just don't think. I think he's. If he wasn't a former Mets prospect, they wouldn't be making the same hype about him. That's my thing. I mean, look. It turns out Kelnick, he was better than Kelnick. Kelnick's a mess. Pete Crow's a good player, and the Mets could certainly use him in center field, cost controlled. A lot of strikeout there, but doesn't hit lefties. To me,
Very good,
that's
very good center fielder.
very good
But
center
he
fielder.
steals bases. He's got speed. I mean, he does a lot of things that could have helped the Mets the last few
Sure.
years, for sure. But
Right.
I agree with you. He'll probably improve the strikeout situation and be a little bit better bat to ball hitting.
A lot of missed bats. And I'll tell you what, if Luis Robert puts it together, you could argue that he, for a lot bigger price, of course, is just as good. Maybe not defensively, but as an offensive player,
Well,
just as good.
supposedly Soto was getting in Robert's ear and telling him, "You swing too much. Cut down your swings and
Well,
just look at more pitches." And if that was his advice, if that's true,
it's
that
certainly
was great
working.
advice. And he's doing offensively. He's doing a great job. The other thing is, I thought he was more of a speed demon, but what I don't know are his running splits, but. He looks slower than he may be. It's hard to tell, but I thought we were getting a faster player.
I thought it was an interesting physical comp. Gary Cohn compared him to Darryl Boston as a phys, and that's not bad. That's not a bad physical comp. I mean, Darryl Boston was a component player. Now, one of the things that came up, and you mentioned Reimer, but first base is wide open because I'm not so sure Beatty's an everyday first baseman. Vientos hasn't established himself here. Young is. We'll see. 4A. Does he become another Max Muncy with the Mets? Who knows? But in the chat when your piece went up, Ryan Clifford is a name that came up. A lot of strikeouts. A guy that I've had and I've said if there's anybody that reads as a bust, Ryan Clifford would be that guy. He's all that's left now from the Verlander trade. Now that Drew Gilbert is moved on to San Francisco and he's in AAA. Clifford is interesting because he has the clearest path if he can put it together to get to the big leagues because of the opening at first base.
But he's got like 24 strikeouts this year in 2 weeks of games. I'm really worried about that. The power is there. I mean, scouts look for raw power, which is hard to explain. There's in-game power and there's raw power. He's certainly got raw power and he's got in-game power, but he doesn't have a clear defensive position. So what does that mean? Is he a DH? Because you don't necessarily want a DH who strikes out a lot. Are you going to sacrifice some defense, which is something David Stearns doesn't like to do, and put him in first base? He has the speed. He's actually got more speed than it looks for a big man. He's about 6'3", 220. He has some decent speed for a guy his size. So it could be that that's his best position would be in, say, right field. But because he's a left-handed glove, I'm always intrigued that, left-handed first basemen to me are the way to go, because they just have that for, especially now, where if you're only getting two throws over to first base, well, three if you actually pick off the guy, but you're getting those limited throws. You want a left-handed first baseman who's putting that right hand down. I think that's a little bit of a plus. That doesn't mean every right-handed first baseman is not good or not capable. But I'm worried about, I just don't know if Clifford has it, but the bell is going to have to go off in his head, and something's going to have to make him just a better hitter. And whether that can happen or not, I don't know. And this probably goes to that whole argument you were talking about, is why can't the Mets develop more hitters? But they've always been an organization that leans more towards pitching. And
Yep.
I don't think that's changing anytime soon. But the name of the game is pitching. Look what happened this the last few games.
Yep. I mean that I think and John in the chat brought this up and I think it ties into what you just said. Do you see anything with their drafting? Because again, there's been so many different management teams over the last 10 years. Even though there's been some consistency, Tommy Tanis, he's no longer with them, was there a lot of the time. Kevin Parada bust, Colin Houk bust. When you look at Stearns, he's got Bench, and then Voit is his other pick. Do you see a difference in the quality of the drafting? And what do you think of Voit compared to some of the other first round picks that have really panned out, even the ones that are still in the organization?
Well, the Mets really like Voit, and that's why he's playing. He's got, I think, the most at bats in the at the Brooklyn level, Eastern League. He's playing all the time. He didn't get off to a particularly good start. He's got a lot of athletic skills. I really debated where I wanted to put him. A lot of guys had him in the top five, and I couldn't see that at all. I have him as number 11. He's an interesting guy, but I wouldn't place a bet. I wouldn't give any odds on him to get to
Right.
the major leagues, but it's possible. He's a good base runner. He's got speed, but again, it's really hard when a guy came up and played like 16 games last year to really figure out what his value is. I did see a little bit of him in spring training. I was impressed with what I saw in spring training. He's a hustling kind of hair on fire guy. I think that some of the real talent last year, remember we talked about at the beginning of the year, anybody who lived in the New York area should have gone to Brooklyn to see games because that's where all these best prospects were. And they won the championship, which is, I mean, it's not one thing people have to realize. In the minor leagues, nobody cares. In the front office, they don't care if they win, they just want them to develop. But when you have a plethora of talent at one, or the Mets had, didn't Binghamton win last year too? So they had Binghamton,
And I think they might have, yeah.
Binghamton and Brooklyn, and they were just loaded with talent. It wasn't the case at Syracuse. In
Yeah,
Syracuse,
they won the Eastern League Championship.
Syracuse, there's hardly any real prospects right now. Morabito, Clifford, and Senger, and then you have a few pitchers, but not many. Most of the talent's at Binghamton and at Brooklyn again.
And
So,
let's remember, and I know the fans don't want to hear this because it's an excuse. The cold, and it hasn't been terribly cold here in New York. There was a couple of cold days. They moved the games earlier this week. But when you're playing in Binghamton, Syracuse, Brooklyn by the water, right by the beach there, it's brutally cold. And Brooklyn's an awful, awful hitter's ballpark. in most cases.
Less
So
than
that could
everybody.
be playing into some of the poor offensive numbers. I mean, let's face it, around the league, you're seeing poor offensive numbers. There's a lot there. It could be that just we had a cold winter. We're finally looking to get out of it. So that could play into it. But when you look, you mentioned a name that came up with the fans as they were going through your piece. And he's not eligible because you very, very clear. Once you hit age 26 and a certain amount of games or at bats, you're not putting them on the list. You're not going to have these. It's not like the transfer portal where you could get G League experience in the NBA and then, well, you know what? I'm going to go back into college here and be a prospect. That's not the way it works here with the Talking Mets podcast. At least they are on our positional prospect and pitching prospect list. But they call him Haden Bonds Senger, Singer, Haden Senger, crushing it at AAA. Always good to have catching depth. Ben Rodvert is there too. Senger's a guy you've been high on. You felt he's the best defensive catcher in the system, better than Torrens.
Oh no,
And you
I think
got to
he's better
wonder
than
with
just that.
you've been high on him. We'll bring him up because it came up in the chat.
Yeah.
They love him.
Senger is, in some organizations, actually have him ranked as high as second in defense in the major league as a major league receiver to the Giants catcher. And I think he's just a wonderful. I owned a baseball academy and we specialized in catching. And my son caught Zach Greinke for three off seasons, got a chance to talk to Zach about catching and catchers. And it's really interesting and fun to watch a guy who really knows how to catch. It's a very rare commodity, by the way. And there's a lot of good catchers out there, but guys who are gifted catchers, yeah, count them on one hand at any given time. And this guy is gifted as a catcher. Now, I've also felt that he's had power that has really gone it's unachieved and unattained because of the limited time he's gotten. He needs to play, five or six games a week and really develop his stroke. Now, he got off to a great start in 14 games. He's got three home runs and seven RBIs. He's got a 930 OPS. The Mets are really loaded in the catching department. I think picking up Rorvet was a great, he's a left-handed hitter, and there can never be enough switch or left-handed hitting catchers, hardly any. And so that was a good pickup. He's got a lot of experience. So they're really covered there, and they're covered in case any of their major league catchers. And they're covered, you mentioned it when we spoke before this podcast. Torrens is going to be a free agent, and boy, I guess there's going to be teams out there who want to pay Torrens. And now,
To be their starter, sure,
will
with
the
that.
Mets want to pay him? Because he is a talented player who I think could be a starting catcher on any given teams and or a platoon catcher on any given team.
You got to wonder if he got in the future, if you look at Torrens, the kind of season he had in Seattle, because he did get some time to play, not every day, but in 2021, he played 108 games in Seattle, hit 15 home runs, had a 730 OPS. I think he's improved his defense quite a bit since then. And he's had his moments as a Met, but I mean, he's playing in 200 at bats. He can't get any kind of flow. You wonder with him and Senger as the catching tandem and moving Alvarez to a DH spot, would that be the future? And I guess two parts to that, Dave. With the ABS system, is it other than the arm part, is the receiving part as important? Is it all about the arm now?
I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. And Polanco has a 3-year contract or a
2
2-year?
years. Yeah, I
Two-year.
mean,
So
I guess we're not
Polanco,
convinced. You're not convinced he's a first baseman.
I just think, I don't care. I think he's a really good hitter. And I would prefer to have him as a DH who can come in there and jump in and play a position in the infield if you need him. I think that's a value that a lot of teams don't have. They have DHs, and this happened with the Mets. With Martinez and other guys, they can't really play a position. I think that hurts a team with a short bench, and every team has a short bench. And when I was young, and even when you were young, I'm a lot older than you. The benches were so deep that you had three catchers.
You had 10 pitchers, And you had 14 positional players. So you had
Sometimes nine
six,
pitchers.
yeah, sometimes nine. So you had, and when it was 25, you would have 15 and 10. That's a lot of bench, three catchers, a lot of guys. If you go look at the 88 Mets, Lee Mazzilli, Barry Lyons barely played on that team. I don't think they got 100 at bats that year, being behind all the stars that were in that lineup. So it'd be interesting on that. But you're high on Singer, and you could see him being at the very least the future backup, homegrown, and maybe his bat's improving. He'll have some pop in the winter baseball. Maybe his bat is getting to the point where he could at least be a threat at the bottom of the lineup to pop one out. He's not going to hit to 300, but just pop some home runs, and that's his ticket as a backup catcher in the big leagues.
Yeah, I think that Senger, the Mets, there was interest in Senger. I think the Mets, but there was not enough interest in terms of what was going to come back to the Mets to move him. And they have to protect against Torrens leaving. I think there's a possibility that in 4 or 5 years, Alvarez could be moved to a DH. But right now, Senger is the protection against something happening to those guys or Torrens leaving for another team. Now, if the Mets are out of it, Torrens, they might be able to get something really nice for Torrens at the end of July.
Sure. That's not a conversation we want to have today, but
No.
if the Mets are not in a position where they're in the muck and Cohen blesses off on another sell-off like he did a couple of years ago, very interesting. That'll be make for quite an interesting
Torrens
radio.
gives very impressive at bats.
Yep.
He creates an environment in his at bat that everybody in the field, especially he hits the opposite field.
Yep.
They have to
Got
be on
robbed of a
their
double
toes.
today. Got
He's
robbed
got
of a
a,
double
yes,
today.
he did. And he has some power. He has a little sneaky power. I think actually that Senger has more power, more natural power. And hopefully he gets enough a chance, enough at bats, which he seems to be getting at Syracuse, to really prove that he's got significant power and the ability to play offense. Because there's nobody in the game, nobody at any organization who doesn't think that he's a gifted receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. As you go past number seven on this list, the lay person, the lay Mets fan knows pretty much all the top seven names. When you go down to number eight, number nine, all the way down to your 15th top positional prospect, and then honorable mention, that's where it gets to be a little bit more of a crapshoot. So give me a couple names that maybe one that really fans should be paying attention to, and one that surprised you as you were doing your research, like, hey, this guy's a lot better. Is there maybe that's the same person, but I thought that'd be the way that we could kind of just go through what really is a smorgasbord of prospects that we have no idea, and none of them are going to contribute in the near
Well, I
term.
get, there's a lot of talk in the system about Randy Guzman, who's he started as an international free agent at 17. He's got power. He's 6'4", about 215. He's got that when I was talking about raw power, and he's got a 48% hard hit rate, which is pretty good, and he averages about 108 miles per hour on his exit velocity. That's impressive, and he especially at a young age. So I would keep an eye on him. He's fun to watch. He's at St. Lucie right now, and that kind of power is, Pete Alonso type of power. I don't think he's particular. I think I mentioned it as not an. Doesn't appear to be an athlete, but neither does Pete. He appears to be somebody who's got this interesting tool that's worth watching. There's another guy who's, what was he on my list? He was 12, right? Herberto Rincon. And he's somebody who I went fishing for somebody, and I said, I got to find somebody who I think could be a real sleeper. And he's really interesting because he signed in 2023, again, international sign out of the Dominican. And he's just been refining his game for 2 years. And he looks really, really interesting. Really high on base guy. 6'1", 175. He's got some speed. He's got good range in center field, play center field. Could easily slide over to one of the other corners. I think that everything is in the right place for him, and he could be a guy who really can contribute in the middle of the lineup, and that to me is exciting. You want a guy who's either going to be a speed guy who's a leadoff type hitter or a ninth place hitter, and that could be a Ewing or a Morabito. But somebody who can, hit third, fourth, fifth, sixth, those are the guys who are really hard to find. They're all hard to find these days, but I like him, and I'd say keep your eye on him. So there's two Dominicans who, are really interesting ball players right there. Another guy who I had the pleasure of being able to watch a little bit, I saw him a few times at University of Central Florida. I live in Orlando, and I did a little scouting there. And this guy, Antonio Jimenez, and he is another really interesting guy. He's a native Floridian. He slashed at he switched from Miami, where he wasn't playing, to UCF. And he broke out with a 329 average and 575 slugging, 11 home runs, stole 11 bases in just 55 games. So he put himself on the draft mat, which I mentioned here, and he was eligible at 21. And so the Mets took him. I think it was a great move. He's got good hands. He's got a fast bat. I think he has the tools physically. Again, he's about 6'1" and 200 pounds. There's another guy, Wandy Assisian, who I wouldn't put in here because he just started playing in the Dominican Summer League. Oh, he will play in the Dominican Summer League this year. And by the way, that's something worth talking about. There's a lot of guys when people are looking, and some of the guys who do these rankings, I don't know if they realize. I was talking to a scout yesterday about it, who's many times been to the Dominican. And I said, so one of the reasons a guy will play 3 years, 2 years in the Dominican Summer League is because they're immature. They're not ready to leave home. These guys are 16 at 17.
And they're 16, they don't speak the language, it's a new culture, it's so hard. There's a movie
Exactly.
called Sugar that actually encapsulates that. If you haven't watched it, watch it. It's about a kid, a hotshot kid prospect that comes over to the States, and interesting,
Yeah, not Diaz, but Sugar. Yeah, I've seen that. It's
not Sugar,
very interesting, right? But
Sugar.
so these guys sometimes, like Rincon, yeah, after in his third season, started putting it together, man. He matured. He filled out a little bit. He probably realized, I really do want to leave home. I really do want to go over there and play baseball on the other side of the pond. And so it just hits. Now, some guys can get out of there after one season because they're a little bit more mature, and some guys need to be near mom and have mom's cooking and what have you. So, there's nothing wrong with that because one of the things that's happening in Major League Baseball right now is there's some talk that they're going to do away with drafting high school players,
Interesting.
that's what the commissioner would actually like to see.
So they're going to be like the NFL where you have to have a certain age to actually be eligible for the draft.
Well, I think it would never hold up legally because how could you still go after 16 and 17-year-olds from Latin America and then not let somebody in high school who wants to play professional
It is.
baseball?
I mean, it's going to create a whole political storm
Yeah.
also. But I mean, you could probably do it if both were ineligible. Part of that would be because the NFL limits and even the NBA had an age limit. I mean, with the corruption that goes on, what is it, the Buscones over there down in South America, there's so much corruption. I mean, there's been a book about that.
Well, Mauricio, I think Mauricio was somebody who got screwed by
Yeah, I mean, there's
Dominicans.
so many things taking advantage of them. It's dirty. I mean, if that's something they want to clean up, so be it. But I will tell you this, There'll be a lot of kids who miraculously go from the age of 16 to 19 pretty quickly when it comes down to it, and a little bit different with birth certificates and verification and all that down in South America.
Well, what Manfred wants to do is help the owners by making college baseball,
A minor league system.
they've reduced the minor league systems radically, and they're still talking about reducing it a little bit more. So they want to make the colleges the place that the minor league system,
He
just like
sees
it is
the
for
NBA,
basketball, and
right? He sees the NBA and he sees the cost. And it's a shame because, we're kind of zigging out of this, but it's part of the whole prospect thing. These small towns, and I've been to so many minor league towns. When I was a kid, my dad would take me and my brother to a trip every summer. We went to Rochester, Scranton Wilkes Barre, Pawtucket before when they had a team. And the towns, I mean, I remember going to Pawtucket and they loved Mo Vaughn. That was when Mo Vaughn was on the Paw Sox at that point. When I went to Rochester, Cal Ripken's heir apparent was playing, a guy by the name of Manny Alexander. Mets fans may remember him briefly. He was supposed to be Cal Ripken's replacement. The fans loved him in these old mill town like and now obviously these it's hard to maintain a with the cost of doing the cost of running a team, it's a little bit harder. But I could see that, but it would be a real disservice to the growth of the game, I think, by snuffing out these minor league teams. But maybe it's the rise of independent ball and people like the Long Island Ducks and Atlantic League. Maybe it's better for some of these guys to be almost like their own independent contractor until they get a signed affiliated ball.
Hey,
Most of
one of
these
my
kids are doing their own instruction now. I don't know how much they're everybody has their own hitting coach or pitching coach or whatever it may be.
son's teammates in collegiate summer ball is playing for the Bananas, the Savannah Bananas now. And you know what? Those guys make, compared to a minor league baseball player, those guys make
Harlem Globetrotters, yeah.
$40,000.
And maybe they show skills that translate where someone says, "Hey, I'll give you a shot at that
That's
point."
probably not going to happen. From independent ball, it does occasionally. I think that there's a lot of different ways to get to the major leagues, but it is being reduced. And if owners continue to, it's a funny thing, man. They pay these players and the major league players so much money, and then they're looking to cut corners in other places, whether it's a front office person or whether it's, their minor league affiliates or it's scouting. And that's really a problem because scouting is taking a really big hit. And that's a reason that they probably want to, that there is, I'm not saying that they're going to stop drafting high schoolers, but there is some talk of it. But if they do, there's less need for scouts because there's a lot of scouts who spend a lot of time at high school baseball games. So, and that's not a good thing for the game,
Nope, not at all.
because there's
Not at
only
all.
so much you can learn looking at video and metrics. You can learn a lot, but you can't learn as much as somebody who gets there, sees somebody play on the entire field in the dugout, how they're behaving, how they're adding things together, how they're making in-game adjustments and things like that. There's a lot of that. You just can't pick it up on a video. It's not going to happen.
And as you go down into the honorable mention, what's interesting is that the two names that the listeners wanted to hear more about were Yovani Rodriguez and Davison Gutierrez. Now, some other content creators have talked them up. We've talked about them here on the show. You put not honorable mention. Yovani Rodriguez is only 19, Gutierrez is 20, so they're a little bit of ways away. Any thoughts on the fans? Because those are names that are getting a little bit of play more on the social media side when it comes to Mets prospects.
Well, they're not Alvarez. They each have some talents and they each have some very big negatives. And I mentioned them here. So, it's so hard to tell with a young catcher. I think probably harder than any other position. Because one thing is they don't play every day. They tend to, in the minor leagues, you tend to alternate your platoon or your alternate catchers. And like Ronald Hernandez, I noticed either today or yesterday he had a triple, a big triple in the game that helped Brooklyn win. I think that it's a little bit easier with somebody like him. And he's got a really good approach in terms of hitting. He's got some tools as a thrower of the baseball, but he's got some weaknesses in terms of, if you can't block and you have trouble framing. A lot of people thought the ABS system would, make framing less important. No, I think it's actually just as important. It's just because how many times are you challenging during a game? You still want to frame
You have
pitches.
to, it's a feel like today, Brett Baty. I mean, it was, look, to be fair to the umpires, it was 0.1 off the strike zone, looked like a ball, and it was a strike. It barely was a strike. And challenging that is going to go a long way. I agree with you. I actually like the ABS. I don't think it's going to make catching and framing less important. I think now if they go straight
Every pitch,
a
then it would.
ABS, then forget it. And are we going to go that route? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I have no issues. I was against it when it first was brought up, but when I'm looking at it now, I'm like, hey, I don't have a problem. And it also shows you how difficult the umpires' jobs are. And I'll tell you what, velocity and spin, they do a pretty good job from what I've seen. The ones that they've been challenged, most of them are not that far off. Couple are an inch or so that I'm like, all right, that's egregious. There was one today that was egregious, that Torrens challenge and won, that was about an inch low, a little bit more. So it'll be interesting there. But
There was a pitch today that was so much a strike, it wasn't even close to being near the
yeah.
outside of any part of the plate. It was an incredible. It was 6 inches up from the bottom of the zone, and I don't know what the umpire was doing there, but that was bizarre. But for the most part, I think it's a good thing. I'm not so sure I would want every pitch to be on the an ABS system. I think it takes something out of the game, but this is fine. I mean, if they said they were adding one more challenge, it wouldn't bother me. I think that's fine too. But anyway, those catchers, I kind of like Rodriguez, but last season he had a hamstring problem and he only caught about 24 games. So that's the kind of thing when you're looking at these guys from our perspective, where we can't see them play and we can only look at some video, maybe once in a while get to see them in a game. It's just really hard to really look at catchers and say, what are they going to become? If none of those three guys made it, wouldn't surprise me. If one made it, that would probably be pretty interesting and good. I do want to say that Eli Serrano the third, he's an interesting guy to watch, very athletic. He actually was on the same high school team as Ryan Clifford. You imagine what that team was like. And he's gotten off to a fantastic start at Binghamton. So,
And
he's
not getting talked about a lot.
no, but everybody who ranks Mets prospects has him up there in the top 10 pretty much. And I think I had him at number 8. He's somebody to watch. I had him at number 9. I like his athleticism. He can do a lot of different things. He hits the ball hard, and his strikeout rate really low. I mean, it's below 13%, which is pretty good. And in zone contact at 95%. So those are the kind of things if you're looking for somebody who can develop. It's hard to teach those things.
I do think, and I put this in my non-predictions predictions, the Mets are going to have, and I know it doesn't look good now because they're 7-9, but it would be, for crying out loud, it's 16 games. The Mets might have a tough decision at the deadline where there's a piece that they need to move forward, and they may have to give up something of pain. I know everyone's getting crazy about Anthony Munoz and Baltimore reliever. The Mets gave up fungible reliever arms. I'm not talking about. I'm talking about somebody that could develop either on the pitching side or the offensive side into somebody that hurts.
Well, JT Ginn looked pretty good yesterday,
I mean, he took a
didn't
while. He took a while though, and he pitched well against the Mets last year
he
in
did.
Sacramento.
He did.
As we wrap up, so let's do something talk radio-ish here. And we'll put you put you because I want to curious your thoughts. If you were a betting person, and maybe I shouldn't say that because there's all the contrary, but if you wanted to put down some chips to the center of the table, a friendly wager, and the one player that is there one player that you would out of this group say they're going to be a star, Ewing, Pena, Benj, which one would it be if you had to put your money down? And I'm talking impactful, right, Reyes, Alonso level, not really good. Impactful.
Because I haven't seen enough Pena, it's easier to judge Benj against against Ewing, but I would say Ewing, and for exactly the reasons I spoke about, because I made him number one, and as you know, I made him number one long
Right.
before even before spring training, and that elite speed is just breathtaking. But he combines it with that really good bat to ball stuff. And the other thing is, he's been improving so much every year. He's taking these giant leaps, which tells me he's got a good head on his shoulders. He wasn't a college player. He's taking those leaps. With Benj, he came out of college and, what, 1 year later, he's in the major
Yeah.
leagues. So we weren't able to watch the progression the same way. Ewing, I mean, I say hands down, Ewing is the guy.
I'll make a prediction on that. I don't blame you on that, and I think Peña could be next level talent. He's the one guy I could see could be like the Mets version of Juan Soto, but probably, you're right. Too soon to say, put him aside. I could see Ewing getting called up in July, similar to how Conforto got called up 10 years ago, and Greg Jeffries got called up in the late 80s to jolt this offense. Now, I don't know if he'll be an everyday player. He probably gets called up, he'll have to play every day, but I see, let's say he dominates double A by mid-May, early June, he goes to triple A. By the All-Star break, he's hitting at Syracuse. And even if the Mets, and I'm sure they'll stabilize, but if they look at those numbers, even if Bench starts to hit, the fans are going to say, the media is going to say, bring this guy up. The speed is going to be, to me, the determining factor. And he has a little bit of versatility with second base. That would be my prediction, that you have him next year, but I think AJ Ewing might be a jolt of energy at some point, like those guys that we mentioned. And that would be my prediction. Now, Peña, that's a crapshoot, but that could be next level star. I'm not ready to say Benj is a bust. But there was a lot of, there might be some, like you said, some development, like a baby. And if he turns into a Nick Markakis type of player, that's not bad.
That'd be
All
great.
star, poor man's Nick Mark. I mean, if Ewing, to me, I think we talked about it, could be Kenny Lofton. He could be that kind of impact. That's a whole different ballgame at that point.
Well, I think when you look at the elite speed, there's something incredibly exciting about it, because there's not too many guys who actually have elite speed. You go around the
No.
major leagues and count them on one hand, basically. I think that the other thing is, and for everybody appreciates that, watching that progression happen as a real fan who gets into the minor league stuff, which not everybody does or has to be interested in. One of the things is that the Mets last year, you have to be so careful. They gave away so many players to
Yeah.
get, help at the deadline, and
It's gonna,
they ended up with
and
nothing. If they had
they
just,
did.
yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
if they had just gotten Tyler,
Tyler Rogers,
Tyler
yeah.
Rogers,
Yeah, Helsley didn't help. I
the
mean, there's also
submariner.
40-man roster implication. And look, we could get into this another time, but there's gonna be 40-man roster implications on some of these guys, Rule 5 draft, all that other stuff, that kind of stuff. So what's next, Dave? So the fans love it. We preseason pitchers, hitters, a ton of work, yeoman's work. The fans will want to know, when will we hear from David Mills again when it comes to the Mets organization?
Well, I'll try to get something out in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be taking a little break, but
Perfect time to get away from Mets baseball.
I got to tell you, man, doing something like this is
Sure,
it's
it's a
really
lot of
not
work.
easy when you're not privy to all the tools that the guys in the
I
front
know, but I
office have.
think the difference between someone like me and a lot of people that do it. You have even if it's at a lower level, player development type of experience, and I think that plays a lot into it. And not just because you understand the game and you know people that are the game, but you at your own level, you saw how development is, even, and you know the process, and that's important. And this stuff's hard. Developing prospects is hard. It's right to criticize the Mets. This is going to be the thing that will either keep Stearns will either get hot extended or fired, I believe, in the next 24 months based on this? Because if the trajectory is continuing to disappoint, there's no way you could sustain a winner with the cost of players, elite players. There's no way you could free agent your way anymore unless you want to have a
No.
$700 million payroll.
And look what's happening. I mean, look at Diaz as an example. You know,
Yeah.
nobody's talking about it. His
He got benched. His velocity's down, which
velocity's
we've
down.
seen this movie play out before, mind you.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I've been saying the minute that guy's fastball is pedestrian, he's a bad pitcher.
And look at
And
Pete.
I mean, maybe he could slider his way through games, but he's not dominant. And there's a lot of bullets in that arm. And he's never had an injury or Tommy John or anything like that. And I wanted to sign him. I wanted him to sign Pete Alonso. But when you start to hear the names, the Ewings, the Benjes, whatever, and you look at where Nimmo would have clogged things up and Pete would have clogged things up and having Soto and Alvarez, you talk about Alvarez, you can understand what's going on. Dave, listen, this has
I
been
know.
awesome, man. Enjoy some well-deserved time off. We're looking forward after the trade deadline. That's usually when you do the next round of this. We'll talk more before then, my friend. All righty.
All right, man. Have a good one.
This
Go
is
Mets.
our friend David Mills. Great work. Hope you enjoyed talking a little bit. And if you go to the talkingmetspodcast.com, sign up for the free subscriber. Love you to be a premium member. If not, free subscriber. You'll be able to read the top positional prospects. You'll be able to read the top pitching prospects. Dave does great work. We talk about it, and it complements a lot of what we do here. All right, that's it. Thanks for tuning in. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Slavat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, NoG, Mike Slavat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And as I said, come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show. You can subscribe to the show there and get all the updates you want. Come join me at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And like I said, I want to thank the good folks of the Believe Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. And in between, check me out over at Extra Innings for those premium subscribers. Till then, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets. Head for the